Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in West Bloomfield, graduated summa cum laude from the University of Michigan, and got a law degree from Northwestern University. He's a third-generation lawyer, and over 50% of his law work is pro bono. He hosts a TV segment entitled Making a Difference, and is a member of the Board of Governors of Wayne State University. One other thing, he's also been blind since birth. His name? Richard Bernstein, and I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with Richard Bernstein, who in 2006 was a Michiganian of the Year. Richard, welcome. It's an honor to have you.
Well, thank you. It's such a pleasure to be on this program with you tonight.
Can you start to talk about your childhood and your parents?
Well, I'll tell you something. I am an incredibly blessed person, and I wake up every day feeling that sense of blessing. I was born into a wonderful family with incredibly supportive parents and incredibly supportive siblings, where really the lessons that were taught was that, as your program connotes, anything is possible and there should be no limitations. And for that, it's a gift that I will always be grateful.
What did you learn from your mom, and what did you learn from your dad?
Well, I think what my mom and dad both taught was that notion that if you believe in something, if you dream in something, if you want to go out there and do something, that there's no reason why you can't. But the greatest lesson I think that I was so blessed to learn from them was the notion that I was limited by nothing. Limited by nothing. And for that, that kind of energy, that spirit, that enthusiasm that they have for life, that they have for people, has really translated into how I live my life. And ultimately, I think from my perspective, I've learned from them that everything happens for a reason and that you'll always have what you need when you need it. And because of that, you can get through any challenge, any obstacle, any hardship that might ever come your way.
All right. It's fine for you to say you have no limits. You're 34 years old. You've never seen.
Well, actually, you know, the funny thing about that is that I really do look at that in very much as a blessing. Because ultimately, the reason why I keep using that word blessing is for this reason. That ultimately, if you're born with a disability, you are given in many ways a tremendous opportunity and a tremendous gift from the heavens. And the reason for that is that you're given the gift of purpose. You're given the sense of why you're here, what your purpose is, what you have to fight for, what you have to do, what you have to accomplish. Having a gift of purpose will translate into passion, the passion to fight, the passion to get involved. And having a gift of passion translates into the greatest gift that you can possibly have. And that is the ability to have a connection with the heavens and a connection with other people. For people who are not born without passion and who are not born without purpose, don't have the blessing and the ability to connect with others. Having that ability to actually have a genuine, sincere connection with people that you meet, with people that you encounter, with people that you befriend, having that ability to connect with people, I would argue, is the greatest gift that you could possibly hope or ever imagine having.
How did you get through your young years where you were different? No doubt you were ridiculed, etc. How did you get through those years?
You know what? I am so glad you asked that question. And to families and to young people who are listening out there right now, especially those kids who are in secondary education, middle school, high school, the thing that I'd want to tell you is that when you go to middle school, when you go to high school, you probably think this is all there is. that the people that I'm meeting, the people that I'm friends with, the people I'm having lunch with, the people that are in this social hierarchy is going to be a reflection of how I'm going to be forever. The message that I hope that people understand, whether you're a person who is on top of the pack when you're in high school, you're the quarterback, you're the cheerleader, you're the person everyone looks up to, or you're a person like myself who struggled and had a few more challenges when you were going through secondary education, the one thing that all people at that age group should know is that it ends. It ends. And that ultimately, most of you are going to live till you're well over 100. So high school, as challenging as it is only about 4% of your life. And ultimately, once you leave high school, they call it commencement for a reason, because it really is the beginning of a new and exciting life. And it's really a situation where basically you don't have those limitations and don't have those confines. So if you're having a hard time in high school, and if you're struggling the way I enjoyed high school as much as you could, but it wasn't easy. But the most important lesson is, most young people, once you graduate from high school, you will realize that the world is an amazing place. The world doesn't have limitations. You'll have the chance to go to places like New York or Los Angeles. You'll have the chance to really move out and do things you never thought was possible. So please don't think that high school or middle school and the age that you're at is how it's going to be forever, because it's not. You have the entire rest of the world waiting for you as soon as that commencement takes place.
Richard, since you've never been able to see, how have you learned what it's like to see?
That's a great question. Ultimately, you have to look at things in perspective. Even though I don't appreciate or understand the world in a visual context, in a visual sense, because I'm not able to do that, I see the world in a little bit more of a spiritual connectivity, in a more of a spiritual sense. So in my situation, when I meet someone, I don't have any idea what they look like. I have no idea what they look like. So for me, the way I approach people is, I don't have any sense of what their physical features are. So you're able to see things in a much more spiritual context, in a much more spiritual light. And ultimately, you experience the universe and you experience the world through a certain sense of energy that people have. And again, it goes back to the question that you asked before. You're able to have a true and enhanced connection with people because you're not distracted by irrelevant things like looks and physical features.
We're talking to Richard Bernstein. When we'll come back, we'll ask him how he ever graduated from the U of M as a summa cum laude.
I think my parents are asking the same question.
And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
This is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR with Jack Krasula.
Welcome back. We're with Richard Bernstein, who's run 6 marathons. Richard, you've never been able to see. How'd you ever graduate summa cum laude from the U of M?
Well, I guess, you know, there are miracles that sometimes do exist. But I was incredibly lucky to have a wonderful, supportive family that, you know, worked me through the entire process. And it was great. I had incredible faculty and incredible people I had to work with. But it was a struggle and it was a challenge. The way that I do things, you know, when I was in undergrad taking exams, is I memorize and internalize everything. So I had a wonderful person that would sit with me and we would read things 9, 10, 11, 12 times, and I would commit everything to memory, and I would internalize all the notes and all the information, and, you know, he would take the notes in class, and then we would sit, and we'd go over them, and over them, and over them, and over them, and for me, everything takes a lot longer. If it takes a person an hour, it takes me 4, and that's because I have to hear things on a repeated basis. But after I hear things over and over and over again, I will internalize them and then ultimately be able to convey the information to the professors and to the faculty in that manner. So I had to work a lot harder than the average student. But the upside to that was I was able to internalize the information and have a better understanding of the information when it was time for exam period.
After you get the degree from U of M, then you get a law degree from Northwestern University. Isn't there an LSAT test with a lot of graphs?
I am so glad you asked that question. There's a lot of people listening right now who are preparing to take what's called the law school admissions test. The law school admissions test is the most prejudiced, bigoted exam that a person could ever go through. The LSAT has a section called the logical games section. The logical games section, exactly right, requires graphing, requires charting. An example of a question on the logical games section would be A sits next to B, sits next to C, sits next to D, sits next to E. Where is E in relation to A if B and C are sitting next to each other? Well, in order to solve that question, you have to chart and diagram. And what's sad about the LSAT is the fact that basically what's happening is a lot of blind people are not going to law school because of this exam. They look at this exam and they think, wow, I can't do this, so I'll never be a lawyer. The sad reality is that the LSAT has no correlation, no relationship whatsoever with practicing law or how someone's going to do in law school for that matter. And it's very unfortunate. The only reason the LSAT is used is because law schools are beholden to U.S. News and World Report, which ranks the law schools. And they rate a mean LSAT score as a factor in basically how they rate law schools. So the law schools are focused on the LSAT because they want a high mean LSAT score because they'll get a higher ranking in U.S. News and World Report. And what's happening is it's having a detrimental impact on the disabled population in a very profound way. And it's unfortunate and sad. And I wouldn't stand for it. So I simply refused to take the exam. And I went on a mission to explain to law schools why this exam was so prejudiced. And thankfully, the Northwestern University School of Law, the dean of Northwestern, heard the argument, understood the argument, related to the argument, and said, you know what? The LSAT doesn't make any sense. We want you to come to our school. So I was thankful to go to Northwestern. It's very unfortunate, however, the University of Michigan School of Law, in which prides itself on diversity and has taken the diversity issue all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court, would not even consider allowing me to have the LSAT waived. But Northwestern, a private school which doesn't make a huge issue out of diversity, was incredibly kind, incredibly good-natured, and said, this is what we need to do because it's right.
You're part of three generation of lawyers. Mm-hmm. Talk about that.
Oh, it's great. Well, I have an older brother, Mark Bernstein, and a younger sister, Beth Bernstein. It started actually with my grandfather, Mandel Bernstein, and of course, my dad, Sam Bernstein. So I come from a family of lawyers. And what's great about it is that our family has tremendous energy and tremendous passion and tremendous enthusiasm for what we do. We have a real strong sense of being active and involved in the community. So, you know, my grandfather passed it on to my dad, and my dad has passed that on to my brother, my sister, and myself. And we have a great time. We all work at Northwestern and 13 Mile at my dad's office building. And it's fun because my mom really enjoys it because she always knows if she needs to find everyone in one place, that if she just comes to the building, everyone's always there. And also my sister's puppy, Cosmo, a standard poodle, she comes and she practices law with us as well. So my sister's dog is the sweetest animal you'll ever see. So we've got a very lively office. It's a family office. It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of energy. And it's actually a really enjoyable and incredibly fun environment to work in.
When we had breakfast recently, you said this, quote, I used to go to Wrigley Field to see the Cubs play.
Exactly.
You can't see.
Absolutely right. But what's so funny about that is the way that I see and appreciate and relate to that whole experience of going to the Cubs game. I love baseball, just love baseball. And being a Northwestern student and living in Chicago, we were on the north side, so I was naturally a Cubs fan. There was nothing like going to Wrigley Field. Wrigley Field was just incredible. And I would go with, you know, all my friends from school, and we would go on a Sunday afternoon or a Tuesday night, and you would sit outside, and it would be balmy, and it would be warm, and you could feel that warmth and that wonderful balmy air that you can feel in the summer. And you would listen as you could hear the people selling the hot dogs or the peanuts or the pop or the pretzels, and you could hear that sound of the crack of the bat. When the bat intersects with the ball and it makes that amazing sound, and you hear the players run, and you hear the announcer, and you hear the crowds, it is one of the greatest experiences that really gives you such a strong sense of community and perspective and a sense of just the fact that everything is right in the world. When you're in a baseball park, especially like the Friendly Kind Fine, sitting on the north side of Chicago, hearing the crowds, being part of the fun, feeling that warmth, having a hot dog and sitting in the bleachers, that is the best way to see. That is the best way to experience a true baseball game.
I also love the Cubs. It's been 1908, 99 years since we've won the World Series.
You know why
Will
I like it?
Will it ever happen?
It's, well, probably not. But here's the thing, is that what I love about it is I love rooting for the underdog. I love the fact that you're rooting for that underdog. They haven't had it easy. They've got challenges. They got all kinds of issues. They got curses. They got all kinds of stuff going on. But there is nothing better than getting a chance to root for that underdog. I always root for the underdog. It's no fun rooting for the Yankees because I got to tell you, you want to root for the people that have to fight the hardest and work the hardest to get to where they're at. Those are the people I always get behind.
Are you a Lions fan then?
Well, the Lions are just kind of pathetic. So at a certain point is, it's great to sometimes, you know, root for the underdog, but at a certain point, you know, you have to ask yourself the question that, you know, you got to have some self-help. And I love rooting for the underdog. I love rooting for people who fight for things, but the Lions don't make any changes. It's always the same thing. And at a certain point, you have to ask yourself, why are you the underdog? And if you don't make the necessary changes, if you don't strengthen yourself, if you don't fight harder, if you don't make the necessary changes that you have to make in order to be stronger, in order to be better, you know, being the underdog doesn't mean that you're weak by nature. It just means that you've got to fight harder. But in the Lions situation, they're the underdog for reasons that go beyond a fighting spirit.
We're talking to Richard Bernstein, and I'm Jack Crisula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now back to Anything Is Possible with Jack Crisula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're talking to Richard Bernstein, who hosts a TV segment entitled Making a Difference. Richard, you can't read and you can't write.
That's correct.
How do you ever prep for a case?
The way that I do trial preparation is I will sit with my co-counsel and we will basically memorize the entire file. We'll memorize all the documents and we'll memorize everything in it. And you know what's so great is that in a way, being a blind attorney, when you go in front of a jury, when you go in front of a judge, what tends to happen with most able-bodied attorneys is they stand behind podiums and they read. You know, they'll sit and they'll read. And as a result, they don't connect because they're reading. So in my situation, I get the opportunity, because of my having to memorize everything, I get the opportunity to connect with the jury. We're having a conversation. And you know what's also great about having to memorize is that when you memorize, your mind puts everything into a narrative fashion. So ultimately, when I get up in front of a jury, when I'm in court, what I ultimately do is I don't do an outline. I don't do what other lawyers do. I have the chance to tell a story, to tell a story of my client, to tell a story of who they are. And when you convey something as a story, when you convey something as a narrative, it's how your mind processes the information. It's much easier to memorize something in a narrative than it is to memorize something from a podium, A, B, C, D, E, and F. So as a result, when I go to court, I am fully prepared. It is completely memorized. It is totally internalized. And then I present it in a narrative fashion so the jury understands, relates, and connects with the story of my client and the story of why they're here and the story of who they are. And it's that kind of a connection which is essential for being able to be a trial attorney.
We're talking to Richard Bernstein. I'm Jack Crisula. This is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Once again, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
We're with Richard Bernstein, who spends well over 50% of his law work pro bono. That's free. Can you talk about a couple of such cases that you did for free?
I would love to. And the thing is that this is why I love being an attorney. And I am so grateful to my family, to my brother, to my sister, and to my dad for allowing me to take on these kinds of cases. What people have to realize when you hear the word pro bono is there is a tremendous expense that comes with taking on cases pro bono. The cases that my division handles are cases that we handle for free. We don't charge our clients. We don't charge anyone. We absorb any and all costs for all the cases that we take in for our pro bono division. So what we attempt to do is basically going back to when I was in law school. It was such a struggle and so difficult and so intense when I was going through it that I made a deal with God that I said, you know what, God, if you get me through this process, if you get me through this hardship, if you get me through the bar exam, then I will dedicate my professional career to fighting for special needs people and fighting for people with disabilities who otherwise don't have legal representation. So we established the pro bono division to do exactly that, to take on cases for populations of people who otherwise can't afford legal representation and in many situations are being abused by the process. So we've got a number of cases that we're in the midst of, but one of the cases that you really wanted to hit on was a case that was handled by us a year or two ago. Actually came to resolution, I'm sorry, about a year ago, so it hasn't been that long. But it was a case where, and many people are familiar with this case because it was so heart-wrenching as to what was happening. This is a case where wheelchair users were not being able to access City of Detroit buses. And you had wheelchair users who were sitting outside for hours on end, 7, 8, 9 buses would go by, and they would still be sitting there on the street corner. And it didn't matter what the weather was. It didn't matter what was happening, you know, in terms of the harsh cold or harsh warmth. They would just be out there. And every time they would protest to DDOT, they would get a little snarky comment card from the Detroit Department of Transportation that said, thank you so much for your interest in DDOT. We look better to serving you more in the future. And this was a sad situation. Because you had a situation where these folks were suffering, nobody was assisting them, nobody was helping them, and the city government, the mayor, the city council, nobody cared about these folks because ultimately they didn't have power, they didn't have money, and they didn't have a lot of resources. So they were being left out to dry. But this is why the law is so important, and this is why I love being a lawyer. It's because even though the political process completely broke down, and because of the fact these folks didn't have resources or power in terms of money or organization, they had the law. And the law says that you can't do this. So we filed a federal action against the mayor. And this case proceeded on for 2.5 years. And it was a struggle, it was difficult, and it was one of those challenges that every day there was a different struggle and a different challenge. And the mayor employed tactics that were completely reprehensible. In his answer to us, they wouldn't even admit Detroit was a city. They forced us to have to prove that Detroit was in fact a city. I mean, it's just crazy things. At every single turn, at every single opportunity, they used to make it as hard for us as they possibly could. But I'm going to end with this. In terms of this case, is there's an old lesson that comes out of it, which is spiritually, you will always have what you need when you need it. As challenging, as difficult, and as hard as things you get, always remember, I've lived to believe this, you will always have what it is that you need when you truly, truly need it. And we were able to get through this process, we were able to get through this hardship, but we were really blessed with one other important factor, is that as things went on, we were joined by the U.S. Department of Justice Civil Rights Division, who brought in unlimited resources and helped us to resolve the case. And in the end, what's happened today is when people drive around the city of Detroit, I often get calls about this. They see people in wheelchairs. They see buses stopping. They see the lifts going down. They see the people getting on the bus and going on their way. They see people going to the movies. They see people going for shopping. They see people who are getting jobs. They see people who are living a quality of life that they weren't able to live before. And ultimately, that's the essence of what the law is all about, is using the legal process to try to make things better for people as best you can. That, to me, was one of my most meaningful cases because it had a direct impact on people who truly needed help, but whose lives were changed as a result of the judicial system.
Richard Bernstein, if Jeffrey Figer ever comes after me, I'm going to retain you as my counsel.
Now, we have, we have different approaches to how we practice law and the way we practice law.
One of your heroes and mentors has been Tony Philippus. Talk to us about Tony Philippus.
Tony Philippus is the perfect example of helping us all to understand that true question that children, that people, that everyone asks, which is, why is it that bad things happen to good people? Tony Philippus was an amazing man. His dream was to be a world-class championship boxer. This was his passion, this was his dream, this was his essence. And one day in Ferndale, he was hopping a train. And as he was hopping this train, it lurched forward unexpectedly, and he fell from the train and was run over by one of the ensuing cars. People would ask, here this person is, he's a young man, his dream is to become a boxer. And he lost both of his legs from the knees up. And here's a person that looks at himself and thinks, my life is over. My reason for being is over. How do I continue? What do I do? And I think the lesson that comes from Tony Philippus, especially for the younger listeners, is that things are going to happen to you in your life that you don't understand, that you don't appreciate, and you're going to ask why. And things are going to happen that are going to make you endure great pain and great hardship and suffering. But in Tony's case, and in Tony's situation, his hardship and his suffering transformed the lives of hundreds of thousands of people. Because what Tony realized was that, you know what? I'm no longer going to be this great boxer. But he realized that he had a tremendous mind for engineering. And he created the Wright & Philippus Corporation, which now employs over 800 people. And because of Tony Philippus, there are hospitals being built. There are programs being offered. There are people getting into athletics. There are senior citizens who are living at home. He has transformed the lives of thousands upon thousands of people. He's given them independence, hope, opportunity, and prosperity. Had he not had that accident, had he not sustained that injury, those people's lives would not be the kind of lives they're living today. So sometimes things are going to happen to us that we can't explain or can't understand. But in many situations, they will happen to us because it's our responsibility to pay it forward. And due to Tony's legacy, he paid it forward. And the quick thing I want to say about Tony is that because of him, he allowed for me to become an athlete. We talked about at the beginning of the program how I've done 6 marathons. Well, I never thought I could be an athlete. But thanks to Tony Philippus, I became an athlete. And I realized what a great value athletics has on people's lives. And thanks to Tony Philippus, I just recently did my 6th marathon. That would not have happened but for Tony's accident. That not would have happened but for the injury Tony sustained and the work that he did. So things will happen. We can't understand. We can't know. But there's a reason. It gets passed on. It gets paid forward. And the effects are far-reaching.
You're extremely upbeat, even though you've never seen it.
I hope people haven't turned the channel because of it.
You always see the glasses half full. Why and how?
Well, I think that the reason that I look at life in this context is, again, I try to look at it from more of a spiritual connectivity, in more of a spiritual framework. And the reason for that is I'm 33. I've got maybe 70 years left on this planet. Also, for me, I consider it a really good day if I don't get hit by a truck or a bus. That's a great day. So it gives you a sense of perspective. But I think ultimately, when you're a more religious person and when you look at things in a spiritual essence, you realize that life is an incredibly temporary thing. It's just a very temporary thing. And because of the fact that it's so temporary, just like we were talking about with the young people who are listening to the program, just how we were talking about high school will end. It won't last forever. It's a temporary state. When you look at things in a temporary perspective, you kind of see them in a different light, which is you see them as a sense of, what's my purpose? Why am I here? What am I supposed to be doing? And because I have been given incredible resources and incredible opportunities, I have those resources, I have those opportunities to actually do things with them. And the last thing I really want to say about this that I think is such a fundamentally important thing is that the biggest hardship a person can go through is having everything they want. Because if they have everything they want, they can't connect.
Fantastic. That's Richard Bernstein. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're talking to Richard Bernstein. Richard, you've never been able to see. Do you ever ask God to give you eyesight?
You know what? Not really, because I'm too busy. I've got too many things going on. I'm way too active. And again, it goes back to everything we've been talking about, which is that you have what you need when you need it, and there's a reason for all things. And I got to tell you something. I have a great life. I really, really enjoy my life. I love my work. I love my family. I love my friends. As far as I'm concerned, I am very content with the way that my life is because I really enjoy each and every day and each and every adventure.
Your sense of hearing is unbelievable. How do you explain that?
Well, ultimately, the way God works is that there will always be compensation. Your body, your spirit, and your mind will always compensate for a loss. Nobody will ever be created in such a sense as to basically be flawed to such an extent that they don't have a purpose. Everyone has a purpose. And really, every soul is expected to reach their potential. So ultimately, in my situation, because I don't have sight, your other senses compensate. Your memory, your hearing, it's not that they're better, it's just that they're used more, they're more refined. But ultimately, again, is that for everyone's purpose and for everyone's essence and for everyone's reason for being, they'll have the things that they need when they need it to do the job they're expected to do. So I have what I need to do the work I've got to do.
Can you talk to us about the program entitled Achilles?
This is the best program ever. Achilles is what got me into running. The way Achilles works is they take folks like me, who otherwise used to view themselves or myself as not being the most athletic person. And what Achilles does is they get you into running. And that is what is so exciting about the Achilles program. And the way it works is you're tethered to somebody. And then you have three or four other people that run with you. And they give you directional cues, hard right, hard left, soft left. And you follow those directional cues as you run. So you've got someone tethered, and then the four or five other people that surround you give you the directional cues so you know hard right, hard left, soft left. You know where to turn and how to turn. And basically the whole idea of Achilles is to get people who are challenged into athletics. And what's amazing about Achilles is when, you know, they first recruited me, I was thinking, wow, what is this? So I got involved. And then, you know, 2-3 years later, you know, I just did my sixth marathon. And what you realize is when you do a marathon, after you get through a marathon, you realize that you can do anything. And it translates into everything else that you do. Because their idea is you get disabled people moving, you get them active. And if you can get them to run a marathon, the full 26.2 miles, it translates into everything else they do throughout the rest of their life. Because I got to tell you, there is nothing harder and nothing more challenging than getting through that 24th, 25th mile on your way to 26.2. They get you through that, you can get through anything. And we actually started an Achilles program here in southeastern Michigan, and we want as many people to get out and get involved as possible. We want disabled people. We want guides. It meets every single Sunday. And we really, if you want more information, I guess, you know, contact the station. But the whole idea is we want to get disabled people. We want to get guides. The whole concept of this Achilles chapter is here in Michigan. It meets every single Sunday. And we want everyone to come out. We want everyone to be a part of it. We want guides. We want athletes. We want disabled people to come out to share in this experience, because it will transform people's lives in ways that you could not imagine.
Who would they call, and what's the number?
They would call Bossy Shemtov. She's the Michigan coordinator. She's with the Friendship Circle. And they should call 248-613-9218. That's 248-613-9218. And she'll give them all the information on how they can get involved. It's not a huge commitment. You show up when you want to run. You run with a special needs person. You transform their life. You have a huge impact.
And they transform your life, too.
They might. But all I can tell you is that for me, ever since I did a marathon, well, after I've done my first marathon, I wanted to do more and more and more and more. But I got to tell you something. I came back after doing that first marathon, and work, everything seemed easier because I took on more challenges. I took on more difficulties. I went through more obstacles, because I got to tell you, you just say to yourself, it boosts your confidence. You just say, you know what? I can do a marathon. 99.99% of the population can't. I'm disabled. I can do it. And if I'm disabled and I can do a marathon, then you know what? There's not too many things that I'm not going to be able to do, because there's not too many things that are as hard as running a marathon.
There's a listener out there tonight, and he or she is thinking, you inspire me, and I've been dreaming about doing something unbelievable, overwhelming, but the odds are just enormous. What would you say to that listener?
You take it back to marathon training. And ultimately, when I first got involved with Achilles, I never imagined I would do six marathons. You take things one step at a time, and you take things one day at a time. No one starts by running and says to themselves and says to their team, I'm going to go run a marathon. You start gradually. You start slowly. You take it one step at a time. And like I say, that's how Achilles worked with me. We went, we started running a little bit. First off, we started speed walking. Then as I got the feel, we started doing a little bit of running. Then we started doing a little bit more running, then a little bit more. And you set your goals appropriately, because ultimately you can't get to a goal that's too out of reach. But what you can do is you can get through each and every day, one step at a time, one day at a time. And then what you're going to find is, as time goes by, you're able to achieve whatever it is you set out to achieve without even realizing how you were able to do it.
What are your dreams going forward?
What are my dreams going forward? What a wonderful question. I think ultimately my dream is this. My dream is really to keep life the way it is, to enjoy each and every day. And for the most part, you know what I really enjoy? I really enjoy when I get to the end of a day, if I've done something worthwhile, if I've done something that I can say, I lived this day to the fullest, I made the most out of this day, I experienced this day. And I think my dream, for the most part, is really getting to the day, enjoying each and every day, taking things one step at a time, living the life that I'm living right now, but most importantly, keeping perspective.
Last question. What advice would you give to our young listeners tonight?
The young listeners, the advice that I would give them, for those who are in high school, I would give them this advice. Be that kind of good person, that kind of nice person, that warm person who reaches out to lost souls, who reaches out to kids who are having a hard time. If you reach out to a lost soul by inviting them to your lunch table, having them come to your house, inviting them to a party, you will transform that person's life. You will impact them in ways you can't even imagine, and they will remember you forever.
Richard Bernstein, thanks for helping each of us tonight see the world in a different view.
Thank you so much for having me. This was such a great experience.
Our guest next Sunday will be a modern-day Einstein, a modern-day Edison, Stan Oshinsky of Energy Conversion Devices. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spoiler.